Greetings and salutations. This is Zach, and you're listening to Reads on the Bitcoin Well podcast. Bitcoin seemingly breaking out of the bear market lows, touching just over 78,000 at time of this recording. The Iranian blockade has been double blockaded by the US, and there's currently a ceasefire, for whatever that's worth. We've been on a bit of a tear lately about the war, with posts on X, articles, and podcasts all covering the conflict and the unique position Bitcoin has in the world at this time. Well, we will continue that today with one more deep dive into the current conflict and the real story behind how it started. I'll waste no time, so we can jump right in. Like always, I encourage you to reach out to my email, z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair@bitcoinwell.com with any questions or praise or suggestions for the show. And with that, let's get to it. The Engineered Collapse: How the 2026 Iran War Really Started, by Zachary Adair. The mainstream narrative frames the current conflict as a sudden eruption of regional tension. Ancient hatreds, religious extremism, a powder keg that finally blew up. That framing is convenient, but it's also wrong. The fuse wasn't lit in the Strait of Hormuz. It was lit months earlier in the halls of the U.S. Treasury by men in suits wielding spreadsheets. Before a single missile was fired, the United States launched a deliberate financial operation against Iran. What we are watching now is just the consequence. And if you understand the monetary history behind it, none of it is surprising, a pattern worth recognizing. Let me back up for a moment, because the 2026 conflict didn't emerge from a vacuum. It emerged from a pattern that has been repeating for decades. In 2000, Saddam Hussein announced that Iraq would begin selling its oil in euros instead of dollars. 3 years later, the US invaded. The official justification was weapons of mass destruction. None were found. Iraq's oil sales were immediately switched back to dollars upon regime change. In 2009, Muammar Gaddafi began organizing African nations around a proposal for a gold-backed African currency, the gold dinar. That would replace the dollar in continental oil transactions. In 2011, NATO intervened in Libya's civil war. Gaddafi was killed, as Hillary Clinton famously stated, "We came, we saw, he died." The gold dinar proposal died with him. Libya's gold reserves were never fully accounted for. In 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine, the U.S. and its allies froze approximately $300 billion in Russian sovereign reserves held in Western financial institutions. Overnight, every nation on Earth watched a G20 country lose access to its own savings via a line item in a database. The message was unmistakable. Dollar-denominated reserves aren't your reserves. They're a liability you're allowed to hold until someone decides otherwise. The pattern is consistent. Leaders who threaten dollar hegemony get removed. Nations that step outside the system get sanctioned. And the nations that survive the sanctions learn the lesson the U.S. intended to prevent. The legacy financial system is a weapon, and proximity to it is a vulnerability. Iran has been learning that lesson for over a decade. In 2026, they demonstrated just how well they learned it, the strategy of financial suffocation. In early 2026, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent admitted in a public hearing that the administration had deliberately, quote, created a dollar shortage in Iran, not as a side effect of sanctions, as the primary strategy. The mechanism was precise: cut off Iran's access to the global financial system, tighten the screws on oil export revenue, engineer a liquidity crisis severe enough to force the Iranian central bank to print its way out of insolvency, trigger hyperinflation, trigger civil unrest, break the currency, break the regime. By December 2025, one of Iran's largest banks had collapsed. The rial was in free fall. Purchasing power was evaporating in real time. Citizens were in the streets. The wealthy, as Bessent put it, were, quote-unquote, wiring their wealth out of the country like rats leaving a sinking ship. Washington had run this playbook before. Financial pressure creates political pressure creates regime change, and regime change creates compliance. What the U.S. Treasury actually accomplished was something far more consequential. It gave Iran and every nation watching a live demonstration of exactly how dangerous it is to keep your wealth inside the legacy banking system. The lesson wasn't comply or suffer. The lesson was any wealth held in a system controlled by your adversary can be switched off with a spreadsheet. That lesson was a natural conclusion, and Iran had already started building towards it, a decade of preparation. When Iran was cut off from SWIFT in 2012, the intention was isolation. The effect was acceleration. With no access to the international banking system, Iran had to find alternatives. They built peer-to-peer networks, they developed domestic financial infrastructure, and they began mining Bitcoin at scale, drawn initially by subsidized energy costs that made it economically compelling. The U.S. periodically targeted this infrastructure. Kinetic strikes in mid-2025, officially framed as hitting nuclear enrichment facilities, appear to have had a secondary effect. Iran's Bitcoin hash rate dropped by 77% in the months following, falling from roughly 9 exahashes per second to 2. Whether that was deliberate targeting of energy-to-money infrastructure or collateral damage from disputed power grids is a matter of debate. But the implication is worth examining. If true, the U.S. military was treating Bitcoin mining capacity as a legitimate theater of war. Iran rebuilt, and by 2026, they had something no sanction regime could touch. The Strait of Hormuz is 12 kilometers wide at its narrowest point. Roughly 20% of the world's oil supply passes through it. It is the single most critical energy choke point on Earth, and following the outbreak of the 2026 Iran war in late February, Iran moved to monetize that control directly. In mid-March, Iran implemented what is called the Strait of Hormuz Management Plan. The stated purpose was to fund operations while bypassing U.S. sanctions and the SWIFT system entirely. The toll was set at approximately $1 per barrel, meaning a fully loaded supertanker owed roughly $2 million for safe passage. Payment options were deliberately chosen to route around the dollar system. Bitcoin, Chinese yuan settled through the CIPS network, USD pegged stablecoins like USDT. The process was deliberately designed to be fast and difficult to intercept. Vessels emailed cargo manifests to an IRGC-linked intermediary. Once assessed, they were given seconds to settle in Bitcoin. The transaction confirms on the time chain before any Western authority can flag it, freeze it, or reverse it. A sovereign nation state formally sanctioned and cut off from the global banking system, collecting payment for access to 20% of the world's oil supply using a mathematically capped, unseizable bearer asset that no SWIFT administrator can block and no government on Earth issued. The Kissinger petrodollar deal was built on one foundational premise. Oil must be purchased with dollars. That premise assumed control over the payment rails. Bitcoin removes the payment rails from the equation entirely. You can't sanction a math equation. You can't freeze a wallet you don't control. You can't print more Bitcoin to get your tankers through the strait. As of April 17, 2026, Iranian Foreign Minister Saeed Abbas Araghchi has announced the strait is now fully open to commercial shipping during the current ceasefire period. Oil prices dropped nearly 10% on the news. Bitcoin hit a local high of 77,000. The reopening of an oil checkpoint crashed crude. The same event set Bitcoin higher. The market is pricing something that most analysts haven't fully articulated yet. Bitcoin and oil are no longer moving in the same direction. One is the old energy-backed monetary system exhaling. The other is what replaces it. The toll period may be over for now. What it demonstrated is permanent. Analysts are already calling this the birth of crypto geopolitics, the first time a sovereign nation deployed cryptocurrency infrastructure as a formal revenue mechanism for a major global maritime choke point. It will not be the last. The military dimension. The financial picture is only part of the story. The 2026 conflict has also exposed the limits of conventional military dominance in ways that should concern anyone operating under the assumption that U.S. naval power is an unconditional deterrent. The cost imbalance is stark. Iran produces attack drones for approximately $30,000 apiece. Intercepting one requires firing a Patriot missile at $3 million or a THAAD interceptor at up to $30 million. Current U.S. missile defense systems achieve an estimated 20% hit rate against drone swarms. The math favors the attacker in a way that no amount of defense spending can easily resolve. U.S. carrier groups, including the USS Gerald R. Ford, are operating hundreds of kilometers from the Iranian coast. The reason is hypersonic missile capability. A single successful strike on a destroyer changes the entire strategic calculation. So the most powerful naval force in history is keeping its distance. The fiat system funded the military that was supposed to enforce petrodollar compliance. The military is now discovering the limits of that enforcement. There is a symmetry here that Mises would have recognized immediately. The overextension of the monetary system and the overextension of the military that depends on it are the same problem wearing different uniforms. The signal the rest of the world is reading. Iran is not the only country watching this unfold and drawing conclusions. Taiwan is reportedly evaluating Bitcoin insurance proposals, studying whether sovereign Bitcoin reserves could provide a financial backdrop against the kind of blockade and sanctions scenario that Iran just demonstrated is survivable. The logic is straightforward. If your adversary controls the reserve currency, holding reserves in that currency is not safety, it's just exposure. Saudi Arabia began accepting yuan for oil in select transactions in 2023. The BRICS bloc has been building alternative settlement infrastructure for years. The freezing of Russian sovereign reserves in 2022 accelerated every one of these conversations. And now we've seen a nation state collecting Bitcoin tolls on global oil supply. The de-dollarization thesis has been declared premature many times. What's different in 26 is that it's no longer theoretical, it's operational. What this actually means. The petrodollar was born in 1974 when Henry Kissinger tied oil to the dollar. It survived for 50 years because there was no credible alternative. Gold was too heavy, too slow, and too easy to confiscate. Other fiat currencies carried their own sovereign risk. The dollar was the least bad option for global settlement, and so the world used it. Bitcoin is the first monetary technology that changes that calculus at a fundamental level. It's not a better fiat currency. It's a different category of thing entirely. A ledger no nation state owns, a supply no government controls, a network that no military can shut down. The 2026 Iran conflict isn't just a geopolitical crisis. It's a proof of concept. It demonstrates in live conditions the real economic stakes that a nation state can survive financial warfare by opting out of the financial system being used as a weapon. And it demonstrates that the energy markets that gave the dollar its post-1974 dominance are beginning to accept settlement in something the dollar cannot compete with on the merits. Sound money is no longer just a financial preference. It's a geopolitical survival strategy.